You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Up first, we have a report from Ronnie highlighting some of the submissions made to the Parliament's Justice Select Committee around prisoner voting rights.
3 weeks ago now, I did a report on the Electoral Registration of Sentenced Prisoners Amendment Bill, which would look to restore the right to vote for prisoners serving a sentence of less than 3 years. Since that time, public submissions have closed, and the committee is now hearing oral submissions. The bill received over 2,500 submissions, and the committee has already heard over 10 hours of members of the public speaking over Zoom. After watching a decent chunk of these hours myself, I have pieced together a few clips of these submissions. I was firstly interested to hear from Thomas Beagle from the New Zealand Council for Civil Liberties, who also submitted on the 2010 bill which imposed a voting ban on all prisoners. He spoke about the justifications for that bill at the time.
I guess my main recollection of it is that there was really no justification given at the time for why they were doing it. There wasn't any linking of what it would do for prisoners, what it would do for victims, what it would do to reduce or increase crime. There was none of that. It was just purely seemed to be political posturing.
Sophia Roberts criticised the current law as it stands as being inconsistent.
Two prisoners can commit the same crime, but if one gets sentenced to home detention and one gets sentenced to imprisonment, only the former will be able to vote. And likewise, the law is based on the data sentencing, so the law as it stands doesn't punish serious criminals, as Paul Quinn puts it, but really only prisoners whose sentencing date and time spent in prison aligns with the date of the general election. So two prisoners could commit the same crime and be sentenced to the same length of time in prison, but if the dates differ in relation to the election, only one will be able to participate.
Indeed, many submitters were of the opinion that the three-year limit was arbitrary and that the right should be extended to all prisoners.
It's unfortunate that Parliament, having considered the matter of this fundamental human right of the right to vote, has not taken this issue to its natural conclusion and followed the advice both of the Ministry of Justice and of the Waitangi Tribunal in extending the right to vote to every person in Aotearoa over 18.
That was Tanya Savicki-Mead from Just Speak National. We heard a number of submitters respond to common justifications for removing the right to vote.
One is this idea of deterrence, that if we take away the right to vote, somehow people will be deterred from committing crime. I don't think that's particularly realistic. I don't think that anyone who is contemplating committing crime or is in the middle of it will be deterred from that by the possible loss of the right to vote.
That was lawyer Greg Robbins. Nithya Narayanan from the University of Auckland Law School's Equal Justice Project addressed the moral justification for removing voting.
Detractors of this argument frequently suggest that those who commit crimes have displayed poor judgment and that they are therefore likely to exercise similarly poor judgment in the political sphere. Our response to this is that the right to vote is just that. It is a right to vote. While, of course, in an ideal world, we would see all voting citizens making perfectly informed decisions, it is neither practicable nor fair to then start policing which adults get this right and which do not, based purely on their supposed capacity to arrive at decisions that are morally or logically sound.
We have seen many draw parallels between other rights that prisoners are deprived of, but Shona Vought of the Opportunities Party highlighted why this is misleading.
We've seen repeated references by some MPs to the freedom of association or freedom of movement, for example, as if that in any way has relevance to the right to vote. It's a red herring. Quite clearly, when a criminal is sent to prison, limiting rights of association and movement are easily justified. So you're comparing apples and oranges. The clear distinction here is that the highest legal institutions in this country have told you it's unjustified.
What makes the deprivation of voting rights different to other rights is that it tends to have an ongoing effect on the prisoner for the rest of their life.
One thing that we can all agree on is that people, once they do re-enter the community, should be encouraged to participate in democracy and in democratic processes. And we know that the long-term consequences of having the right to vote removed while you're serving time in prison is a de facto lifetime disenfranchisement. I don't think that's anything that any respectable parliamentarian would want to recommend or would want to support. And I think that the most pragmatic way that we can encourage that participation and the right of everyone to have a say in those who govern them is to, again, do what is consistent with the Bill of Rights Act, consistent with the tribunal's findings.
That was Tanya from Just Speak once again. Criminal lawyer Rob Harrison highlights the Waitangi Tribunal's point that the disenfranchisement is not just of the individual prisoner,
but also the impact on following generations. What happens is if people are disconnected from the voting process, they are disengaged from the process of being a part of the community. Every election year, I invariably ask my clients, are you enrolled? Are you voting? Some of them are not aware that an election is on. Some of them have no opinion. Some of them don't see the point because they are disenfranchised.
The committee found the submissions of Eugene Ryder extremely helpful as a previous prisoner himself.
I know that there are a lot of prisoners that struggle to participate in society, and having them further not participating in societal processes only puts them further, I suppose, from the reach of being able to participate positively. And some of them don't even know how to enrol. And I assume that once a prisoner has been sentenced under the current legislation, that they're taken off the roll. And from what I've read, the onus is on them to re-enrol upon their release. So I'm not sure why it would happen automatically when they enter prison and not automatically when they exit prison.
Given the disproportionate effect this ban has on Māori, the committee valued having Owen Lloyd from the Tairāwhiti District Māori Council speaking from a tikanga point of view.
And I base my views on our tikanga of muru. And muru, a lot of people think it's about revenge or eye for an eye, but that came along with the view of Christianity. But in fact, for us as Māori, it's about rebalancing. It's about rebalancing the universe, really, that when somebody has done something against the community, there has to be a rebalancing of it, rather than, as we would kind of consider, there has to be a punishment.
T. Lemus from People Against Prisons Aotearoa also denounced the idea of punishment.
Is the purpose of our justice system to correct and to address harm where it's been done, or is it to add to the total amount of pain in society? And that's effectively, from my perspective, what punishment does.
It was a great pleasure for the committee to hear from the Honourable Chester Burrows, a former National MP who, interestingly, did not share the views of his successors, especially in regard to their arguments about victims' rights.
I think making an argument that these people have offended and so their rights should be taken away tends to indicate that there's something of a mutual exclusivity, in that if you extend a right to someone in prison, you are taking away a right of a victim, specifically their victim. And that isn't the case. We should be doing right by our victims, and we should be doing right by the people that we incarcerate, the prisoners, the wrongdoers, those who have committed crime, and some of those crimes absolutely horrifically.
First-time submitter Meleseni Luhama Tawalupe further commented on the victim issue.
At the end of the day, this does nothing for victims. This does not protect the victims. This does not give them access to mental health care. This does not give funding towards welfare systems. What it does is just articulate that if you commit a crime, you're a bad person.
On the topic of mental health, it was also valuable to hear from Hosea Tualamali'i, who specialises in mental health and addiction, and went into prisons as part of the He Ara Oranga Mental Health Inquiry of 2018.
In reflecting on who these people are, the mental health and addictions challenges they already have, I'm very lenient towards us instead having a human rights and a whānau-related approach where we clean up our prison so that wairua can actually be in that space. But then in context of this submission, as I've sort of said, is I really would like you all to consider voting as a right, not a privilege. And as part of that, I know each of you represent different political parties and your philosophies are different, but I'd encourage you, probably the loudest thing we heard from New Zealanders 2 years ago was that mental health and addictions, and when we consider policy in terms of those things, aren't politicised. And I know that must be the most difficult thing for you all, but that's what New Zealand has asked for, recommendation 40 of Te Aroranga. And so, in not making this a political football, let's have all prisoners able to vote.
To conclude, here is a clip from Bernice Williams from the National Council of Women with a novel view of how the government's COVID-19 rhetoric plays into this issue.
We've been hearing the phrases, we're all in this together, and our team of 5 million, a great deal over the past several weeks, as the country bands together to seek to eliminate the COVID-19 virus from New Zealand. The concept of team is a powerful one, and there's considerable empowerment given to individuals when their participation and collective efforts are valued and acknowledged as a significant contribution towards the well-being of the country. With that in mind, and acknowledging the collective efforts of the country's citizens over the past weeks, we see this bill as a golden opportunity for Parliament to establish a level playing field from which our team of 5 million can continue to work collectively to seek improved outcomes for the country as a whole.
That's all for today, but these are just a fraction of the hours of submissions the committee has and will continue to hear. You can watch the full live streams yourself on the Justice Committee Facebook page. The Justice Committee's findings are due back on the 2nd of June. You may remember from my previous report that a key issue with this bill was the shortened select committee process, which many ministers viewed as inappropriate given the current COVID-19 pandemic. While there have been some submitters who echo this concern, the resounding theme from submitters seems to be that it would be more unjust for this bill to not pass in time for this year's election, and thus deprive prisoners of another 3 years of their voting liberties. In the words of lawyer Graham Edgler, who also submitted, "It is a case of two wrongs making a right. The 2010 law which imposed the ban received only 54 submissions, 50 of which were opposing it. While there may have been concerns that New Zealanders have other, more pressing issues on their mind at this time, the sheer number of submissions this bill received show that democracy is alive and well, even in these unusual circumstances."
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.